with you again, because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping. And the vision that was planted in my brain still dreams. I walked alone, narrow streets of cobblestone, neath the halo of a street lamp. I turned my collar to the cold and damp, when my eyes were stabbed by the flash of a
problematic. I listened to the words of this song, which most of us heard originally by Simon and Garfunkel back in the 1960s. It did not have the meaning then than I believe this version of this song has today. Good evening. Jeffrey Bennett here, Perspectives on America. Kind of a mixed bag program today. Normally I can come into a program and have a pretty good idea what I'm going to title each hour. The second hour, yeah. The first hour, no, it's a different ballgame. I got off the air at 5 my time last night, 6 Central, 7 Eastern. And I ate dinner about 6. And I passed out and went to sleep. I woke up about 1 o'clock last night in the morning. And I couldn't go back to sleep all night. Oh, I tried. I may have passed out for a few minutes at a time, but finally by 4:30 this morning, I said, that's it. I just got up and got to work. I've got much to do. I've got headlines that have been compounding me, just beating the living daylights out of me. When I publish on Sierra Madre Precious Metals, we typically will publish a lot of headlines, brief couple little paragraphs out of the articles, and provide you with a link. This week I've been publishing more meaningful stories. But over the last couple of months, I've been publishing more and more headlines on Federal Observer as relates to this horrendous invasion of America that's being allowed to take place by this horrible administration. And hence I came up with a new title for these headlines, not the headlines themselves, but the posting. January 25th, 2024, the continued invasion of America. The insanity will not end. I began working on that. I finally took the time to start working on that 3-4 hours ago. And I'm just appalled at the number of these headlines that come from numerous different places. But what each one of them says, sometimes they're duplications of what others have said with their own writings. And I did something unusual today. I posted an image on these headlines that are sitting at Federal Observer. And initially, I posted a large picture of, you know, these immigrants down to the Texas border with the wire that, you know, everybody's just screaming, holy hell, get removed. Oh, they might get hurt. Yeah, well, a lot of other people might get hurt. I posted that picture at the top and wanted to make a statement. So I found another image, because so much of what we're hearing about right now is taking place in Texas. That's huge, absolutely huge. And I'll share a couple of headlines with you, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time with it. But all of a sudden, I made a determination to reverse the two images. The second image, I posted at the bottom. I made a decision to post it at the top with a sub-headline, Remember. And I posted an image of the Alamo. Listen to some of these headlines. Biden administration has released 6.2 million illegals into the U.S. in 3 years, often through parole loopholes. 2023, 900,000 migrants who were released after they walked up to the official border gates, plus another 1.1 million migrants who were released after they crossed through gaps in the border wall. That doesn't even count those that got to fly in. It's insanity. Supreme Court has let the Biden administration remove razor wire at the U.S.-Mexico border. That's another headline. Texas says this ain't over, because the razor wire is still up along a contested section of the U.S.-Mexico border, one day after the U.S. Supreme Court voted to let federal Border Patrol agents remove the barrier, which had been installed as part of Texas Republican governor's security initiative while the state's legal challenge to the wire cutting plays out. Another headline. Texas National Guard responds to the Supreme Court's order to remove the razor wire in Eagle Pass by installing even more. Texas Governor Abbott says he's not going to back down. The recent actions of the Texas National Guard in response to the Supreme Court's orders have sparked a heated debate among the public. The Guard's decision to install even more razor wire in Eagle Pass, despite the court's order to remove it, has raised numerous questions about the state's authority and its conflict with federal laws. Just shortly before going on the air, I received an email. See if I can find it very quickly. Oh, and by the way, my friend Al Benson has written a new column called Good for Texas. Let's see if I can find this thing. Just because I want it now, I should have held on to it. Nah, it's not going to be simple to find. Not going to be simple to find. Nope, I can't find it. I'm sorry. Former Nebraska governor stands by Governor Abbott, says that Biden intentionally is slowing talks of border reform. Biden does not want border reform. I've had numerous conversations with people as to some of the reasons why all of this. Another headline, standoff on the Rio Grande. Texas National Guard faces off against the federal government in a fight over razor wire. Another headline, 51st Texas County declares invasion at the southern border. One day after the U.S. Supreme Court ruled against the state of Texas, Same story we shared before. Another headline, Supreme Court not done with the border issue while Texas vows to hold the line. Border showdown. Texas defies the feds. We will continue to deploy razor wire. I mean, look, I'm sorry, folks, but the fact of the matter is that if we don't, all these people are going to be coming into Texas. They're all going to get loaded on planes and buses and trains and everything else. They're going to shoot them up to Chicago. They're going to shoot them up to New York. Maybe Canada. Maybe Lord knows what other state. And you and I are going to foot the bill. This is getting appalling. We don't need all this. We've got enough problems in this nation. Oh, and then, this is a perfect example. Another headline. California, which is about bankrupt as it is, has put together a $3.1 billion program to provide health care for undocumented migrants, and has specifically stated it will be paid by the taxpayers. Approximately 700,000 illegals living in California will now be provided health care coverage by the Golden State. $3.1 billion. As they inch California closer to its goal of providing universal health care to its 39 million residents? What is Governor Gavin Newsom up to? It sounds to me like he's trying to buy another election, which is pretty much what Joey has been instructed to do. You know, Joe Biden. Make sure that you do what you have to do to make sure that the Democrats win the next election. It's not a matter of the Democrats winning the election. It's America is losing their assets. We have got the biggest government in the history of the world by a massively wide margin. But how does it feel to have the largest government that the planet has ever seen? When I was growing up, I was taught that we had a capitalist system, that we had a limited federal government. Of course, neither of those things have been true for a very long time. Today, the United States has the biggest government in the history of the world, and it gets even bigger with each passing year or day. Because running that gigantic government requires more money than we actually have. So we're going to into staggering amounts of debt. But there's no way that our politicians will ever agree to reduce the size of the federal government to an appropriate size. And so we're stuck with this system until the day when it finally collapses. Friends, we've reached a stage where most U.S. households are at least partially dependent on federal government. We very much prefer not to call ourselves socialists, but that is precisely what we have become, like it or not. Sadly, if we attempted to go back to the way things were 100 years ago, most Americans would not know how to survive. Let me share some numbers with you to illustrate what I'm talking about. About 3 million people work directly for the federal government. 3 million. Now, last year, 2023, the federal government spent $6.13 trillion. That figure alone is larger than the gross domestic product of every nation on the entire planet, except for the U.S. and China. We have more than 70 million Americans on Social Security. Now, I can't knock that. Of that 70 million, how many people who worked for it and earned it, like me, like you? The crazy thing is, I made a lot of money for a lot of years working for other people. But I've been self-employed now since 1996 and have not paid into Social Security. But I'm still getting my share every month. We have more than 65 million people in this country on Medicare. More than 81 million Americans on Medicaid. And more than 41 million Americans are on food stamps. That's Americans. How many of these illegals are on food stamps or getting some form of Medicaid? Of course, there's a lot of other programs that hand out money to the population on a regular basis. Massively bloated federal government that so many of us depend upon constantly consumes enormous amounts of money, big mountains of it. We can't provide enough money to keep it going, so the federal government has been piling up some insane amounts of debt. Since 1980, by this time I was broadcasting for what? Oh, I hadn't been. I didn't start till 95. 1980, the size of the U.S. national debt has gone from $1 trillion in 1980 to $34 trillion now. Put this in these interesting contexts. The combined wealth of Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, Mark Zuckerberg, Bill Gates, Ken Griffin, Mark Cuban, Ray Dalio, and George Soros would not be enough to even pay the interest on our national debt for 1 year. The combined net worth of most prominent billionaires in this country would not be enough to pay a single year's interest payment on America's ballooning national debt, which currently stands at that astonishing figure of $34 trillion. Now, what I'm about to share with you is going to sound a little bit repetitive, but it's not. It's compounding. The combined net worth of some of America's most prominent billionaires, Musk, Bezos, Zuckerberg, Gates, Griffin, Mark Cuban, Ray Dalio, George Soros, adds up to approximately $726 billion. Now, that's according to data compiled by the Bloomberg Billionaires Index. $726 billion. And yet the net interest on our national debt is currently at $730.8 billion. Which dwarfs the sum for previous years. And so, my friend, we're now at a point where the national debt has become a major national crisis. And yet we keep bringing in 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 million illegals that we're going to support. Percentage of Americans that believe that our politicians should do something about this has been going up. A 2023 Pew Research Center survey found that 57% of Americans said reducing the budget deficit should be a top priority for the president and Congress. The year before was 45%. But the politicians in D.C. don't have the stomach to do a damn thing about the wild spending because they might not get reelected. Because they know that if we try to live within our means, it would instantly plunge the U.S. economy into a horrifying economic depression. The voters wouldn't like that at all. So instead, they're just going to try to keep the party going on for as long as they can. In fact, the size of the federal deficit in December was 52% larger than for the same month 1 year earlier. U.S. federal government posted a December deficit of $129 billion. That was up $44 billion 52% from 1 year earlier. The outlays rose while receipts fell from December 2022 levels, which were swelled by pandemic deferred tax payments, the U.S. Treasury Department said. Well, we have to forget that we're also funding numerous wars and funding numerous countries around the world. Ukraine, my God, the amount of money we pumped into that country. And we're trying to combat little stuff in North Korea and China, and we're just spending money like there's no tomorrow. I got news for you. There ain't no tomorrow. The Treasury says that outlays for December of this last month rose 3% to $559 billion. That's a December record, partially because a result of higher Social Security outlays, interest on the public debt, and yet the receipts for the month fell 6% to only $429 billion. It's kind of simple. America's empire of money seems to have reached the end game. Our debt spiral is out of control, my friends. Our currency is rapidly losing value. Everyone can see that our entire system will inevitably collapse. But for the moment, the talking heads on television continue to tell everyone that our leaders know exactly what they're doing. And believe it or not, millions of people actually believe that bullshit. Oh, have I offended you with that choice of words? Too bad. Wake up, people. We're in deep trouble. Horribly, horribly deep trouble. Who in the living daylights is trying to call me when I'm on the air? Now, I'm not going to answer it. I'm just going to reach over and grab this phone. It's somebody the guy in California. Stop trying to call me. I'm on the air. Watch this. I'm on the air. I'll talk to you later. Unbelievable. The guy's a listener to the network. Obviously, he's not tuned in right now. I guess I could sit there and say that our economy is in big trouble. I suppose from a historical standpoint, I'd like to know who caused it. But we take it a step further. The world economy is in trouble. There's things that some of us know, things that maybe we learned in school and at home, things that I've spent much time teaching about over the years. For those of you who've been around any length of time listening to me, back in 1998, I was contracted to create 25 hours of video for a community-owned television station in North Carolina. There was a six-hour series I did called, that's stupid, it's right in front of me. I entitled it All the King's Men. My intent at some point here in the near future is to take those audio cassettes, and we had recording problems, we did it. We're going to try to clean these up, and it is my intent to re-air this series. And it is profound. Some of the things I'm going to share with you right now were a part of that series. Not directly. Because in order for us to understand what happened to our economy, we must travel back in time to Frankfurt, Germany. The event being the birth of Meyer Amschel Bauer in 1743. To Moses Bauer, who was the owner of a counting house. Now, There are those who will say that he's a depiction of Ebenezer Scrooge. Mayer lived in the Judenstrasse, Jewish street, where they had a symbol for revolutionary-minded Jews, which was a red shield that is spelled in German Rot for red shield. For shield, hence the surname they took, which was Rothschild. So Meyer Amschel Rothschild became the first to bear that name that symbolized the revolution. Oh, originally they were Khazars from Khazaria, which was, they were nomadic Turkic people that worshipped Tengri. The king of Khazaria had political pressures from Muslims to the south and Christians to the north. His army had lost a battle to Caliph Marwan II, and the Caliph forced the captured army into the religion of Islam. And when he was no longer a threat, the army converted to Judaism. The king of Khazaria realized he was losing his kingdom, and when he saw what his army did, he decided to convert his entire nation to Judaism in about 740 AD. And at the time, according to research, there was only 3% of actual Jews from what was once known as the tribe of Israel. Khazaria today is around the region of the Caucasus Mountains, which is now in the region of Georgia in Russia. It was Mayer that was introduced to Prince William Hesse-Hanau of Prussia. Prussia, which later became part of Germany. And after getting his training in banking from the Oppenheimer family, and it was that relationship with the Oppenheimers and the prince where Mayer realized that his counting house or bank could benefit tremendously from relationships with men and families of power in either royalty or government. His counting house was the only supplier of funds to the prince for wars. In fact, after his five children were grown and trained in banking and finance, he sent them to the top financial centers of the time. Italy, France, Austria, England, and the last son stayed in Prussia. And during the Napoleonic War, the one son financed France, the other in England financed Wellington. And the wealth of valuables that Prince William Hesse-Hanau left behind when he fled to Denmark was left in Nathan Rothschild's care. And the amount of valuables were worth over $3 million. It was Nathan that hatched the plan to not only take over control of the British government via the Bank of England, but the taxing of its people to pay for the war debt. And he used the war to his advantage by receiving news of the victory of England over Napoleon via his courier that got to England 2 days before Wellington's. Now, the knowledge of that victory allowed him to sell his British bonds, known as consols, to cause a panic amongst the traders on the floor of the exchange, only to buy them back for cheap and corner the market, as well as take over the Bank of England and subsequently control of the British government. It was said after the war was over, took over the Bank of England, it was the best business I've ever done. If I can control the nation's wealth, I care not who makes its laws. That was the model for all other countries that they controlled via their central banking system that they perfected, even here in the United States. This became known as the Federal Reserve Bank. We'll be right back. Run the music and take.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Oh, Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects.
Email Tom at republicbroadcasting.org. T-O-M at republicbroadcasting.org.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email proudsouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after exercise. It's amazing, and I ordered my second bottle. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. So far, a great product is what it claims to be. Great product. A few days in, and I could feel a difference for certain. Not checking medical stats yet. I know this is really working by how I feel. We'll continue to take this product. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Back, my friends. A little side conversation going on here. Spending a little bit of time talking about Zoroastrians. And there's a distinct reason for it. As we referenced, the world economy is in trouble, big trouble. Who caused it? The things we should have been taught years ago. These are things that I learned years ago and began teaching years ago. All the examples I've shared with you up to this point in time, as I mentioned before we took the break, this was the model for all other countries that the Rothschilds controlled via their central banking system that they perfected. Even here in the United States, known as the Federal Reserve Bank and the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service. In the beginning of the U.S. colonies, Nathan Rothschild pushed for a central bank and using the Federalists like Alexander Hamilton to get it approved. Oh, Hamilton was a Federalist. And yet, people like Thomas Jefferson and Aaron Burr did not like the idea of a central bank, and Aaron Burr had a duel with Hamilton and shot him dead. At the same time, Thomas Jefferson had a distaste for the banks. It was noted in a speech that he gave where he stated, "To preserve our independence, we must not let our rulers load us with perpetual debt. We must make our choice between economy or liberty, or profusion and servitude." Jefferson continued to say that, "I place economy amongst the first and important of republican virtues, and public debt is the greatest danger to be feared. It is incumbent upon every generation to pay its own debts as it goes. If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their money, first by inflation and then by deflation, then the banks and corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of their property until their children will wake up homeless on the very continent their fathers conquered." Well, they were able to get their first central bank established, and yet it only lasted 20 years. The Rothschild family tried again against President Andrew Jackson, Old Hickory, but he would not renew their charter, and so Nathan Rothschild stated that he was going to put America back to colonial status by pulling back on the money supply and throw America into a depression, which was the reason for the War of 1812. Andrew Jackson knew exactly what they were doing and told them, "You're a den of vipers and thieves, and I intend to rout you out, and by the eternal God, I will rout you out." Because he would not renew their charter, they tried to assassinate him, but the pistols jammed, the attempt failed. And he defeated the central bank in 1836, but before Old Hickory died, he was asked what his greatest accomplishment was, and he stated, "I killed the bank." Well, later the Rothschild family tried to take over control of America during the so-called Civil War, when President Lincoln sought out funding from the bank, and they stated that they would loan him the money at over 30% interest. So he decided to have the U.S. Treasury create the first dollar known as greenbacks to pay for the war, and told everyone that this was now legal tender, that they could pay for all their needs with the new dollar. Whoa, the Rothschild family did not like this, and so they tried to separate the North and the South by sending over troops to the Canadian border from England. And the French branch sent over Maximilian to lead Mexico after they assassinated the current Mexican president. This was a pincer movement by their family, by a control of France through the Bank of France, and their government in England through the Bank of England, and the government. The Tsar of Russia, Nicholas, realized what the Rothschild family were up to because they tried to force him to allow them to create a central bank. So he sent two fleets of boats. One boat was sent to New York Harbor, and the other was sent to San Francisco. Well, Rothschild in England stated he would eventually eliminate the Tsar's family from Russia, and 100 years later, his family did get rid of them in the Bolshevik uprising. Of course, Lincoln knew that he had to make a political move, so instead of making the war about the economy of the South having to go through the northern states for trade, he made it a cause to free the slaves. However, he stated that if he did not have to free them, he would not. Well, now that it became a cause of freedom for those enslaved, the Rothschilds backed off their troops from the Canadian border and off the Mexican border. Those that defied them were murdered. President McKinley. McKinley kept the U.S. on the gold standard, which he preferred over inflation. Inflation, you see, is a tax on the poor and the middle class. McKinley was assassinated in 1901 during World War I, where once again banks had run and were failing. Or were they? Well, there's a misquote here, because World War I was not in 1901. But Rothschilds devised a plan to save their banks. They met with men of power at Jekyll Island in Georgia at the J.P. Morgan estate. You know that name. J.P. Morgan Chase Bank. It was there the secret meeting was held to devise a way to get their central bank into place once and for all and have the American taxpayer flip the bill to keep their central bank from failing. And they accomplished all of that through one President Woodrow Wilson. And they were funding both candidates, Wilson and Teddy Roosevelt. They used their agents, the Warburg brothers and J.P. Morgan, to act as the funders for the presidential campaign. One brother funded one side with J.P. Morgan, the other brother the other candidate. Oh, this ensured that they had their man in office to do their bidding. Wilson agreed before he got into office so they would fund his election campaigns. So in 1913, Woodrow Wilson signed into law the Federal Reserve Act and the IRS to pay for the scam on the American people. Do you know the whole story behind that? Oh, they got members of Congress to vote in favor of this whole thing. During the Christmas holiday, when most people were already home for the holidays, the few that stuck around put through the act for the Federal Reserve Act, which Roosevelt signed, Wilson signed. So all of that was first presented to Congress by Senator Aldrich, who was there at Jekyll Island to help put the plan together. Well, his initial attempt failed because he tried to make the glory his by naming it after himself, and there was too many things Congress objected to. So they stripped it all of the things that Congress did not like, made it look as if it was created to benefit the people. The scam was to get it into place where they have changed it over 100 times since the Federal Reserve was put into place. Federal Reserve, you see, is a private corporation. It is neither federal nor a reserve bank, but it is a privately held corporation that 60% of its members are big banks that, by law, have to own a 5% share of non-voting stock. So you can imagine who owns the other 40%. The bank that the Rothschilds own is Kuhn Loeb & Company, which is one of the 5% owners, and they're a foreign entity. And therefore, when quarter one and quarter two were dealt out at $1.7 trillion and $1.5 trillion respectively, guess who got their 5% of the payday? All the taxpayers' expense. And they didn't even kiss us. You know, it was interesting some years ago. Funny to see a video of NBC commentator and so-called financial guru Gene Chatsky, who was an English major, worked for Goldman Sachs, making comments on the economy side by side with Robert Koyosky on Wolf Blitzer's show on CNN so many years ago. And he stated that the taxpayers will not be made responsible via bailouts. Really? And yet, this person being a former Goldman Sachs employee was going to tell the truth about the economy? How much in endorsements does she get from the people in their contracts on Wall Street? She stated that she was afraid that Lehman Brothers would be close to being bailed out. And that was not the plan, since they were a direct competitor of Goldman Sachs, of whom Bernanke at that time, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, was formerly associated with and still connected with their executives. Not much of a coincidence is that they should get the axe and not bailed out, huh? Well, the comment by Mrs. Chatsky shows exactly what you should have learned in school and at home. That you cannot trust the news programs for your financial information because they are heavily connected with Wall Street. Wall Street that sponsors their programs and the people that comment on them. No differently than our elected officials are sponsored by big business and big banks. Does any of this make sense to you? It should. What I've just shared with you is an article that was written in October of 2012. And the author was a very interesting guy. He actually wrote a book. We have this piece posted on Sierra Madre Precious Metals. It's well worth looking at. Why the world economy is in trouble and who caused it. And this article was written, what, 12 years ago? But nothing has changed. Nothing has changed, people. These are the things that we must understand. That particular piece is published on Sierra Madre Precious Metals. Some of the other stuff we've done tonight, the United States has the biggest government in the history of the world by a wide margin. It becomes interesting how it's all intertwined, isn't it? It's unbelievable. Side note. Of course, I won't be on the air for the next 4 days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Starting next week, I've got appointments up the wazoo, which none of which should affect our programming, which I'm happy for. Just stuff going on, stuff that I got to do. And every bit of it's catching up with doctors and medical appointments and all this nonsense. My doctor's office called me because I was in ER last week, and he wants to do a follow-up to that meeting, what it was all about. And that's fine. I've got some other things to talk to him about. Anyway, he'd referred me to a dermatologist here about a month ago, and I met with this woman, and I will inform him it would be wise for him to never refer a single person to her again. She's absolutely horrible. And I was with her for less than 10 minutes. There wasn't a damn thing she wanted to discuss. She just wanted to, you know, get paid to give me a line of BS. Anyway, amongst my goals is to try to work on this equipment and get this 20-some-year-old series ready to share with you again. I may be able to rely on Michael to help me clean up some of the sound issues. We do one of those a week. We'll run it for 5 weeks, 1 hour for 5 weeks. I don't think I'm going to run the sixth hour. Clinton was president during that time, and I don't think there's a need to share it, but I'll have to listen to it and see what's what. Let's see what else we got cooking here. There is an interesting piece. Fresh piece that was just written 2 days ago by Ron Paul. And I don't think we've got enough time to share it, but we'll try it anyway. It's called Don't Tax the Rich and the Fed. Ooh, a marvelous follow-up to our previous commentary. I mean, I've got a few minutes. Ron Paul says select politicians, government officials, economic elites, and experts arriving at the annual World Economic Forum meeting in Davos, Switzerland, were greeted with an open letter signed by more than 250 billionaires and millionaires. The signers request their respective governments raise their taxes. The letter signers were concerned about inequality. They say that it has reached a tipping point. The cost of the inequality to our economic, societal, and ecological stability risk, the letter continues, is severe and growing every day. Oh, they may have a point. Since the 2008 market meltdown, resentment against those at the top of the income ladder has been growing. However, this is not because people are envious of those able to profit in a free market. Rather, the resentment is rooted in the corporatist system that rewards those who manipulate the political process. Oh, this kind of sounds like a somewhat of a continuation of our story we just shared with you about the Rothschilds. Paul continues, if the signatories of the letter want to truly end the type of inequality that fuels populist rage, they should stop calling for tax increases and instead call for an end to government programs and policies that benefit the rich and the powerful. Included are programs like the Export-Import Bank, that subsidize large corporations, health and safety regulations that cartelize markets while failing to protect consumers. Intervention is foreign policy that enriches the military-industrial complex while making the rest of us poorer and more vulnerable to terrorist attacks. How different is this story than the story we just shared with you that goes back some 400 or 500 years? Federal Reserve, Ron Paul says, is the leading cause of inequality. That's not surprising, considering it was created at the behest of bankers and rushed through Congress just before Christmas when few Americans were paying attention. Many Americans become aware of how the central bank tailors its policies to benefit the financial elites following the 2008 meltdown. And then the U.S. government, enabled by Fed money printing, bailed out large financial institutions while the average American suffered. It's oh so interesting, isn't it? By the way, the Fed had been helping big firms for many years. In the 1990s, it was common for the Federal Reserve, then under the leadership of Alan Greenspan, to pump money into the market in response to apparent crises. That, of course, was named the Greenspan put by the financial press. The new money would help some companies and their wealthy owners while reducing most Americans' purchasing power. And middle and working class Americans suffer the brunt of inflation just like they do today. It's simple. Those concerned with the detrimental effects of rising resentment of income inequality should support repealing all federal programs that reward crony capitalists, including programs masquerading as providing national defense. They should also work to audit and then end the Federal Reserve. Ron Paul, dated January 23rd, 2024. It's published on his page, the Ron Paul Institute. We've got it over on Sierra Madre right now. It's interesting to read those two pieces that we've just shared with you in this last half hour. An interesting tie that binds, is it not? Coming up next hour, we're walking away from the economic issues, dealing with some other issues. Oh, I'm sure there's a certain amount of intertwining. You can't get the financial issues out of the way. But it's not the basis. The question becomes, what's next? Another civil war? For what it's worth. You need one of those pills right now? Which one's the one that what's her name saying about? Oh, amazing grace. How sweet it is, I'm telling you. It's crazy. Had some very interesting conversations with my friend Charles Dickens today. And you're going to play some music leading into the Harvey? That actually would, I would kind of like that. I mean, if time allows, you could let me dance with Kim and I'll get ready for the second hour. That would be my break. And we could disconnect, reconnect to make sure we don't have technical issues during the second hour. Oh, my goodness, you're listening to Perspectives America on this January date of the year of our Lord, 2024. God, time is running by, my friends. It is really coming by. Just remember this. Dad, why do people give up freedom for security? It's called Hegelian dialectic, sweetie. They create a problem. The problem creates a reaction. If there's enough fear and hysteria, people will not only accept a solution that limits their rights, but they will actually beg for it. As the words of the old song go, don't they know it's the end of the world? It's amazing. Simply amazing. Stick around. Be back in just a few minutes. I'm calming down. I'm enjoying this. Be right back.
If I were the devil, if I were the devil, if I were the prince of darkness, I'd want to engulf the whole world in darkness, and I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree, thee. So I'd set about however necessary to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. And the old, I would teach to pray after me, our Father, which art in Washington. And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions. Just let those run wild. Until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who wanted until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. And what'll you bet? I couldn't get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus I could undress you in public. And I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.